All right, welcome to episode 225. Paul DiGiovanni is here. Good to see you here in the house. We've met out a bunch of times.
We have.
I would say a little more than just met. I'd say we've been friendly out a couple times.
We have for a number of years now, I feel like.
You know, is your wife famous?
She is.
Okay.
She's pretty famous.
I don't know. What is she in?
She is in a show on Freeform called The Bold Type.
Okay, does it have like a big fault?
It does.
Because when you got married and they had your pictures all over People. I thought, good for Paul. One, she's way prettier than he is. It's always the goal for us guys, right? It's always
totally
the goal.
Worked.
That's a huge compliment. But two, I was like, can people's covering Paul's wedding?
It was in the magazine too, which is crazy.
They actually printed it on paper.
Yeah.
And then I went to your wife's Instagram and she had a ton of followers.
Right.
So she's an actress.
She is.
Huh.
So she.
How did she end up here?
She ended up in Nashville, I will say, probably mostly because of me. We met in LA. So she got her start. She did American Idol. She was finished in eighth place when she was like 16.
How long ago was that?
11 years ago now.
Is it bad that I don't know all the history of American Idol? Like, I'm on the show and I'm like, oh yeah. She's still a singer?
Yes. So okay. She hasn't done anything in a minute, but we're kind of talking about maybe doing something soon. But we met in LA and she was on a show called Faking It on MTV at that point. And then that went a few seasons. I ended up moving here to do, you know, the whole country thing. And we were still together, but it was one of those things where she had to work there and I was here and we weren't sure what was going to happen. She took a trip out, surprised me here. And while she did that, she was like, wow, I love it here. All our friends are here. What am I doing in LA? Like, so.
How long ago was that?
That was 5 years ago-ish.
And so you guys have both been here 5 years.
Well, she's an actress, so of course she's always gone. But like, our home base is here.
You get your mail here.
The mail, yeah.
And what's
I'm always here, like at all times here, unless I'm visiting her.
And her show is called?
The Bold Type.
And how did you two meet? Were you the guitarist when you met her? Or were you already?
When we met, the band was pretty slow at that point already. We'd kind of like not really been doing anything. And I was writing out in LA and kind of just hanging. And I moved in with a friend of hers. And I found out later, she saw a picture of me online with him at actually a Celtics Clippers game. And she was like, who is that guy? And our friend Gavi was like, oh, that's my new roommate. So she infiltrated
to you immediately.
So she just showed up one day and was like, oh, hey, who are you? Like, and I didn't know she had pre-planned it with him.
Nice.
So I kind of got ambushed a little bit, but
the best kind of ambush.
It worked. Yeah.
And I really wasn't expecting to start with that, but I was just thinking about you, which I do a lot.
Thank you.
I think about you a lot. And, I was like, oh yeah, I wonder, because there are so many ways now that if you're good at what you do to have notoriety, success, fame, whichever level of that, because I don't follow that thread of female, I assume it's a female show?
Yes.
It's like tampons and...
There's girl. It's like a younger sort of Sex in the City thing.
I wouldn't stumble upon that. However,
probably not.
I watch Cheer. Have you watched Cheer on Netflix?
I have... It dude, pops up,
dude.
But I haven't
you gotta
watched.
Watch.
Is it good?
And I'm telling you, I was holding out. I was like, "What do I care about a cheerleading show?" But I do really like documentaries,
right?
So I'm torn because I don't.
So is it one of those things where the story is so good it doesn't matter what the thing is they're actually talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
But then you really get into Cheer, and all of a sudden, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. You're like, I believe I can do it, and you're just like feeling all the.
You're playing like fantasy cheerleading competitions on your phone.
It's great.
Okay.
The girl that I'm dating now was like, you should watch it. And I was like, no, I don't think so. She's like, you should watch it. So what I like to do sometimes is prove people wrong. So I was going to watch it and hate it. And then I was going
to
hit her
you
back.
You wanted not to
Yeah,
like
I was
it.
Like, this is going to, I'm going to hit her That's back.
A, I like
way,
going into
that
things
way she
like
can
that.
Just like, I can just be like, hey, leave me alone. I don't want to talk about it mm-hmm. anymore. It's stupid. But I watched the first episode and I was like, oh, what are they going to, only 60 days till Daytona? I need to see what happens next.
So when I turn Netflix on, you know how it has the autoplay thing? Cheer has been auto playing full volume for the past 2 weeks and I just hate it. Get it out of my face.
Speaking to you.
So I'm mad at it, but now maybe it's like a thing that needs to happen.
It's such a good show. Like I'm really wondering what's up with everybody. Like I'm not wondering because I've now stalked them all on Instagram. And luckily they're adults. It's a junior college and it's Navarro Junior College. So they're all like 22.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it's great. It's speaking of girl show, I may even like your wife's show. Do you watch your wife's show?
I do.
Do you like it? Would you like it if she wasn't your wife?
I think it's safe to say, like, I probably wouldn't have started watching the show if she wasn't on it already. But now that I do, it's really good. It's funny. It's well written. There is something for everybody on it.
Well, good for you. Good for you. She's always super nice. Like,
she's like,
yeah, she's the cool. She's, listen, I'll be honest, she's cooler. The two
people,
of you,
like, when they see me out, they're like, hey, where's Katie? Yeah, it's like, immediately, I'm like, I get it now.
I'm going to just roll through some stats on you real quick, and then we'll come back to it. Number one songs that you've written, Justin Moore, The Ones That Didn't Make It Back Home.
Here's to the ones that didn't make it back home. The ones we ain't seen in so long.
Dan and Shay, How Not To. With one of my best buds, Adam Hambrick.
Yes.
Yeah.
And love Adam.
He came out and was playing guitar in my band for a bit, and we played this every night because, you know, if you write it, you get to play it.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't even know that.
And so I did a lot of the backgrounds on this song for a long time. I had to learn it.
Like, that's awesome.
I learned the easy parts on guitar. But yeah, we did that a lot. As a producer, Singles You Up from Jordan Davis.
If he ever singles you up, if he's ever
what's it like to, because I know what it's like when you write a number one. And I have a lot of friends that have written number ones and the number one parties. But if you produce a number one, what happens?
It's less cool, I think. Like, you get, like, maybe a little less love at the number one party, but that's fine. I mean, like, I know my job when it's as a producer. Like, I'm usually, my first thought is, you know, I love production. That's why I do it, or obviously I wouldn't. But I'm always like, man, I wish I had written this too, of course. But, no, it's cool. I mean, I love it all. I like the mix. I like producing, like, usually one record at a time. I've tried to do multiple projects at once, and it just spreads me too thin. But I like having that kind of, like, tinkering with something for so long part of my job, and then also writing every day and just grabbing the magic as it comes and seeing what comes of it sort of thing back and forth really works well for me.
Have you ever got a song to produce and thought, if we just change this part a little bit here, and then they said you deserve writing credit on it because you've changed it so much? Because it's a fine line when you're producing. Because,
I've heard of that happen.
Because you're creating as a producer.
Right.
Has that ever happened to you?
It hasn't. I mean, I've changed little things here and there that I just think are for the benefit of, like, my job as a producer is to make it the best thing possible. I think if I couldn't even imagine being like, hey, I think we need to change all these lines or whatever, because that's kind of overstepping a little bit. If it came to that point at some point, maybe I would, but I never have. So, I mean, I've gotten some pretty good stuff to produce so far, I guess that means.
You could change a word.
If I could get writing credit and no one would care and I could do that every time, I would. I'd change a word.
There are, and you probably know them too, we won't say them, but I know of a couple of artists who have done that, who have been like, I mean, I'm going to cut the song
off. Oh, like as an artist.
Yeah, I'm going to add a word.
I've heard of that too. I think there's something to, if you're an artist and you get a song pitched and you normally write your songs, and I get, like, if you're an artist, you feel like you need to own something to a degree. And if you are actually making it a little more yours, I think that's
but
fair.
But a little more yours is different than going, I'm going to change a word.
Word seems like it's pushing it. I'm not
even
sure the story
line.
Behind that.
Even a line.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
I wouldn't do that, I don't think, but.
Disrespectful to the songwriters who spent the 4 hours or more writing it, demoing it.
Right.
I would like to say I'm not an advocate of people who do that.
Right. If you're not changing it really for the better that you believe deep down in your heart, then yeah, that could be a little, I could see how that could be seen a certain way.
Other songs you wrote, the new Sam Hunt, Sinning With You.
I never felt like I was sinning with you. Always felt like I could talk to God in the morning. I knew that I would end up
wrote that with Emily Wiseman, Josh Osborne, and Sam Hunt. And then we'll do this one, Cassidy Pope, Take You Home.
I want to take you home, and I ain't talking about it to my
Do you miss being the guy on stage? Because we talked about your songwriting, your producing. As you don't, you know, with that job, you're not really out there as much.
I'm back and forth with it a little bit. When I'm at a show and I'm feeling it at night, and I just see the band go up there and they're killing it, and I'm side stage or whatever, I'm like, man, I kind of miss. I have that in my DNA a little bit. I do miss it. But then at the end of the night, when I go home and get in bed and wake up the next morning, I'm kind of like, I'm glad I'm not on a bus again for the next 6 months. Because when we tour, I mean, the country touring thing, which I never knew about till I started doing country, is Wednesday night till Sunday morning, or Thursday till Sunday morning. And then you go home for the rest of the week, obviously. Rock, we would be gone for, there were times we were gone for 9 months straight, tour to tour to tour, driving a van, like every single day playing a show. So
that's crazy.
It was pretty exhausting.
And if you're not familiar, Boys Like Girls. You were the lead guitar player, Boys Like Girls. Mm-hmm. Let's play a few of these songs, because when I was doing pop radio, I played the crap out of this.
Yes, thing. Love it.
The Great Escape. Here's this one. What would you say that your next biggest song is? Like, I know a bunch of these just from being in around it, but I don't know, like...
I think our biggest, like, on paper was Two Is Better Than One.
With Taylor?
With Taylor.
Was bigger than The Great Escape?
I think, like, number-wise it was. But The Great Escape did, like, got us going. That was bigger, like, for, like, a social thing, I think. Like, people remember that one the most.
Yeah, I know all the words of The Great Escape. I don't know that I know Two Is Better Than One. Huh. Maybe because it's all emo and Taylor-y. Like watching the girl show, you know. I'm just like, I don't know if it's for me.
It's like watching Cheer.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And then probably Love Drunk would be.
I know this one too.
This one was a jam.
Which one did you like to play the most when it was time to show up on the set list?
So we had a fun thing where we played. I think that was probably the most fun that got the crowd going the craziest, but we would play certain songs twice in a set. Like, we would open the show with Love Drunk and then close it with Love Drunk, or play The Great Escape twice, or we had a radio event, and was it Baby Bash?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that the guy that had Cyclone and everything?
He was working like a cyclone.
He came out,
Houston rapper,
and he was playing three songs. And he did Cyclone with all the guys, and they were whipping the towels around. And then he played Sugar Sugar or whatever.
Sugar, how you get so high.
Great. And then they played Cyclone again. And the crowd went crazier the second time. So we were like, what if we just did this? It's like, if people don't like it, we won't do it again. But we started doing it. And every time you play the song the second time, they go crazier. So we just started doing it.
And you guys got together how?
Very kind of organically. We were
Did you grow up around each other?
All about an hour away. Like, I was an hour west of Boston. Martin was an hour north. And John and Brian were an hour south. So we just, me and two of the guys started doing, like, this folk project in my town with a kid I knew. And then we finished that. A year later, I got a call to come audition, and I did. And Martin was there, and we just started doing the thing, and everything happened real fast.
And Martin's here now too, right?
He is.
I've seen him around a little bit. Mm-hmm. Are you guys cool or no?
Oh, yeah.
You are?
I was over his house last night. All of us were together, actually.
Are you, really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys ever play together?
We are.
You're going to again?
In April, we're going to Australia and a few other spots.
Have you guys thought about bringing it back?
We have talked about a few different things. We're not really sure exactly what yet, but we're gonna figure it out.
Somebody just put out a record. Mike, who are we just talking about?
Hot Shell Ray
just put out. And they're Nashville,
yep,
too.
We're buddies with them, yeah.
Yeah.
And we took them out on their first tour ever, actually, way back.
They have a new song. It's called, like, I Hate LA or something.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard it?
I have not.
And it's good, but it reminds me of, like, you guys' style that, you know, and a lot of that. Because, again, I was in pop when you guys were over there, too.
So we
both were there. But it's like, man, I could really see you guys doing it again.
Yeah, I think we're kind of just like, I mean, we all hang out every day. Like, we're still really, really close. So it's kind of like, why don't we just see what happened? Like, what's the worst that could happen?
Did the company break up? Like, because you're a band and you had an LLC, I'm sure. The money all went to.
Right. Yeah. I think we don't really have any of that happening anymore. But, like, if something starts rolling again, that's the easy part. The hard part is getting that smash hit number one song written.
Dang. That's pretty cool.
We'll see. I mean, if it's not fun, at this point, we're all doing stuff.
Are all, like, good looking and still, like, hitting it, though. It's good.
Yeah, everything's good.
Yeah, you and Martin are better now. I think you're even better now.
I'll take that.
Yeah, I think, like, you're...
That's awesome.
You're, like, cooler and better looking and in better shape, and I think that I...
All right, we're going to go. I'm going to go right after this with the project
I'm
now.
I'm in for a Boys Like Girls.
We got an announcement at midnight. BLG is
what,
back.
Here's what we'll do. When you guys decide it, you can come on my show.
Okay.
And you can play on my show, and we'll make the big announcement if you want.
Love it.
160 cities.
Okay, that's helpful.
So we'll make that deal right here, because I was a big fan. Whenever you guys do it, if you want, you can come on my show. All right. You don't have to.
I can
send you to Woody at Alt, who's a buddy of mine.
I'm down. No. That's the right space. All right.
How long did you guys do Boys Like Girls?
We did that from end of 2005, and then we didn't, like, say we're breaking up, but we just kind of stopped doing stuff around 2013-ish.
And is that when you went, all right, I'm going to go to Nashville?
So I was in LA, I think, for another year. And I was always on tour when I was living in LA, so I was never there long term. And I think I spent a year there and I was thinking, I have to get out of here. It was just not really, it just got to be Groundhog Day, sort of like every day is the same. I don't really know what I'm doing or why I'm here, what my purpose is. And I grew up in the Northeast and I kind of just missed seasons and normal people and things
Northeast
like that.
Northeast meaning Boston?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a couple country songs with my buddy Kevin Bard, who we wrote How Not To with. We were doing sync music a little bit. Like, he's like a huge sync writer out there.
Which is, if you don't know, like
TV
television.
And film, yeah. Like any of those commercial, like those punk rock sounding commercials for like beer commercials or whatever, cell phone commercials, all that stuff. So one day he called me and he was like, hey, I know this girl who's doing this kind of country thing. Would you be interested in like hopping in? I'm like, I'd listened to country, but I'd never written it. He's like, let's just try it. And I just fell in love with how much sense it makes compared to pop. Like pop, I was always a little confused. Like, what are these people really talking about kind of thing? Trying to write it at least.
Did you feel like pop is more melody driven?
It definitely, like, I mean, pop, right, once in a while I'll still do it here or in LA or whatever, and it's still like some people get on the mic and just sing melodies for 2 hours and pick their favorite three, which is totally different than for country generally. But just the content matter, it's just like I feel like I could just tell a story with country because that's what it is, and it just made more sense to my creative brain, I guess.
So who was the girl you came here to?
It was actually, full circle story, this girl Katie Offerman, who now is signed at Universal Publishing, where I'm at too. So she full circle moved here and started a thing, and now she's like doing an artist thing and everything.
Did you guys and Cassidy ever cross paths early on when she was doing Hey Monday?
Oh yeah. We took them out on tour. We played a million shows.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I remember once whenever it was Hey Monday and Mike, what's the band that lives here?
Hot Chill Ray?
Nope, the girl. We just talked about her.
Paramore.
And at the time they were both around the same spot, but they couldn't be put next to each other. It was a big drama. It was like, you can't put them back to back.
Wait, where was this?
It was in Austin.
Oh.
And it was like, don't put them on the same bill right next to each other.
Really?
And they didn't dislike each other. That wasn't the reason. But it was someone from one of the two camps was like, they have a lead singer, they're female, they're both punk pop, don't put them near
someone
each other.
Someone just didn't want to see it happen.
Someone just didn't want to see them back. From one of the camps. Don't know which camp it was.
Okay. Interesting.
But, and Cassie and I have done a bunch of work together. And I've taken her out and she's open for me on some stand-up tours and stuff. But again, that's kind of a weird thing where you're over there and now you're both, and you end up writing a song for her.
That was the craziest thing, yeah.
So when you come to Nashville, you start writing. When was it when you go, all right, I got to move out there?
So I would take trips. So early on, BLG used to rehearse here, and we took our buses out of here. So I had a lot of experience with the city, especially with the Taylor Swift thing. So I'd always loved it. And me and my buddy Kevin just started doing like 1 week every month. We would come for a week and just write for a week, bring the stuff back, produce it out, see what happens. And we got a few bites on things, nothing crazy or really firm, but it just started to make sense. And I'm like, this is such a community of a city that like we couldn't just be these guys from LA that flew in and like we weren't going to get really embraced. So it's like we have to be there just and write full time. Like, I was kind of just flying here to go back to LA to pay 10 times the rent for no reason and not be where I need to be, sort of thing. And I think it was probably 6 months maybe. I was just like, my lease was running out in LA and I'm like, I think I'm just going to go move to Nashville and just do it.
And you move here, and then do you start to slowly develop a circle, or do you already have a couple guys that you're just kind of with?
Weirdly enough, I feel like I had when I moved here, I had more friends here already than I had left in LA. A lot of people had moved here from LA or from New York, music friends, people I toured with, different bands. It just felt like kind of built in, which helped a lot.
Did you feel like it took a second to shake the guy from Boys Like Girls to being the guy who's going to write country songs?
I feel like when I moved here, nobody cared at all. It's still like very rare that someone like, if I bring it up or whatever, people be like, oh, well, that's so cool. I remember them or whatever. But like it was never like a pigeonholed thing, which is cool. Like a lot of people here didn't really know the band, which kind of maybe helped.
But I bet they knew the songs.
They did. People do. Yeah, people like sometimes once they're like, so what was that band? Tell me about it. And then I like play a few things like, oh yeah. Or like
if you did throw it away, forget yet. And you're like, oh.
It's like three steps up from there. But
no, that's as high as I go. That's as, would you, I'm assuming you were doing the BGVs on those live?
I did some live. Our bass player was the pro at those, so I try to stay away from the singing duties.
What is it like touring for 6-9 months at a time? Like, do you just wear the same clothes every day?
We had like a wardrobe thing, and we had 3 shirts and 3 black pants, and we just washed them once in a while, and yeah, it was crazy.
It just sounds gross. And no offense.
Febreze.
It
was nasty.
A lot of people think touring is glamorous.
It is definitely the opposite.
Right? I'm even going to say at how I do it doing stand-up, if we take a bus or if I'm taking like the small band, if we're doing like, yeah. And we tour pretty nice, and it's country touring too. Don't get me wrong. We'll leave out on a Thursday night,
yep.
Friday, Saturday, and it's a night, and it's still a grind. You know, you see these but not like you. My point is, it's nothing like what you guys were doing. You're in a van for months and months at a time.
I never knew that there was anything different.
What are you eating though at this point? Are you just stopping for fast food all the time?
In the beginning, it was a lot of fast food. It was Panera Bread and Cracker Barrel. When we were broke, we would unfortunately steal a lot of Cracker Barrel food when we had to. Just garbage, fast food.
Which is why you guys are so much better looking now, because you now can pay your bills and eat healthy food.
We can eat a vegetable sometimes.
That's why it's so great that you get back together.
I know.
You can pay for a gym membership.
You're really talking me into this full time. I was 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Well, now get cannonball in that sucker. I'm going to manage the band. All right. Let's do it. Your Instagram, Paul BLG, is that because people have trouble writing your last name?
They do, but no, at a time the band was all your name, BLG.
Were you guys big Warped Tour guys?
We did Warped Tour one time.
That's it, huh? Mm-hmm. Wow. I figured you guys would be big Warped Tour.
We were like in that world, but not. Like we weren't, I mean, we came from that like emo kind of 2003 to 2009 thing, but we were never like fully all in on it, which I think was either why we had success or the other way around. Like we had success because we weren't all the way. I don't know. But we did it one time, and that was gross.
That
if you're going to talk about gross, that was gross.
Meaning?
A case of water every morning, a case of beer every morning, no laundry, you're in a desert, it's porta potties, you got to hit them before the sun hits them, like bad stuff.
I'm getting turned on right now. Yeah, you wrote the ones that didn't make it back home. We talked about that a minute ago. My question for that is, in the room, as you're writing that song, was there ever a discussion of, boys, this song may be too long, this title may be too long?
We never had that discussion, no.
Because I know I've said it about 10 million times, and I'm always like, here's the ones that didn't make it back, and I'm like, God damn, it's like
And I remember when I was seconds. Checking it out on the charts, trying to see where it was, it's always like, the ones that did, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
No, we just wrote it. I did the demo. I think I might have titled it that, and I just always assumed I'll let them figure it out later, and then there it was, the whole deal.
Talk to me about the discussion, and I'm going to ask you to think about things you probably hadn't thought about in a while, but talk to me about the discussion as you're deciding what songs you're going to write that day and how this song came up.
So we were out, we were actually in Green Bay at Lambeau Field in the parking lot. And because Justin was playing like a couple blocks away from there or something. And we were on the bus, we were about to start writing and just talking about ideas. And Justin just mentioned, I guess he says that on stage every night. Like here's, you know, this is throwing up for the ones that didn't make it back home or whatever. And he's just like, I always thought that would be a cool title, and we just started rolling with it and like wrote it in pretty quick. I mean, probably two, three hours.
Did you write it and then record? Did you have a whole setup on the
bus? I had a little rig on the bus, so yeah. We kind of built up the idea. He went and sound checked, and then I had it ready, and he sang it. And
do you look for quirky words or lines in songs that stick out to people? And I ask this because there's one little phrase in that song that I can't not sing every time it comes on. Do you know what it is?
Green bean casserole.
That's it.
I get a lot of texts about that.
Yeah, like at first I was like, and there have been a lot of songs where we hear it and you're like, well, that's weird. But then it's the part of the song that remains with you the most.
It sticks out, and it's also on its own. There's a little pause before it, a little pause after. It's just green bean casserole, right?
I remember it's green bean casserole, grandma's recipe.
Yeah.
Except 9 steps higher, obviously. it's very visual.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that something, did you guys teeter around with that at all? Like, I don't know, do we leave this in? Did it feel quirky at the time?
It was not at all. Like, it was just kind of like, all right, what, you know, we've all kind of had some experiences, whether it be personal or through friends or whatever, of, you know, something tragic happening like this. So like what really happens in these small towns and how can we just make it just authentic and real? And that was just, I think that might've been a Justin thing that he just said, and just, we just wrote it down and rolled. We never like, especially for that song, we didn't sit down and we were like, what is going to make people this or that? We just, for a song like that, you really have to just write it from just authentic experience, I feel like.
Sam has some of those too in his songs. Mm-hmm. Especially Body Like a Back Road. It like Hips Like Honey. He has a couple of those little quirky things too. Yeah. The first time you hear it, you go, oh, that, I don't know if that, and then it's the only thing you remember. It's the thing you remember.
I never know if those are like, a lot of those things are like emphasized on purpose or if it just like happens to be the thing that turns into that.
That's one right
this
there.
This one was definitely not. We weren't like picturing like hashtag green bean casserole trending on Twitter or anything. Like this was like just like a song. Like we were just trying to do the right, you know,
When you finish this whole thing and the song and you record it, you do a rough demo on the bus. Do you think, I think we may have something here with that one.
Because
you're writing a lot of songs.
Right. But I think just based off the energy, especially like being in with the artist, like I write songs every day with a lot of writers and this and that, and, you know, you're lucky if you get a couple a year that do anything. But like when we're with, you know, when you're with the artist and he kind of falls in love with something as you're doing it and it comes out really organically and everyone's fired up, that's kind of like, okay, this could be the thing.
Do you a bit hope to get on with these artists right about the time they start recording? Because you know these artists, the things they cut closer to their record, they're more passionate about, and they, because it's so hot in their minds, you tend to see a lot of those last minute cuts get on. Is that ever a strategy with you?
That is a thing. That's a strategy. I think that's more so, I'll think about that with like pitching stuff. If it's like, you know, none of us have an idea really. Let's look at the pitch. Who's cutting next month? Like, yeah, okay. I mean, that's an obvious one. But I feel like as far as artist stuff, like whenever we get in with the artist is the best, and whatever they are feeling and works out. I don't really try to like strategize it too hard. I feel like for me with being creative and writing, forcing anything too much doesn't really work. Like, even just pitching in general, if it's like, all right, let's write that Tim McGraw, this thing that he really needs, like I always fail.
Interesting.
Unless I try to write, like, just try to write the best song in the room that day.
I force everything. I should really switch up. How not to? What's the story of that? How did it get around to Dan O'Shea?
Well, that was the last write of the year in 2014 or something. It was actually me and Kevin rented a house out here in Nashville. And we had a write with Adam, and we texted him in the morning, hey, we're still on? He's like, oh man, I didn't have you written down today. I'm about to head home to Arkansas. He's like, I have like 2 hours if you want to come by. And we were like, should we even do this or should we just call it? We're like, all right, we'll come by. And we wrote this thing in like an hour and a half. It was crazy. And we were just like feeling it the whole time. And we had it for a little bit. I think Rascal Flatts had it on hold for like a year.
That long?
I think they had it on hold for a long time.
Holding that sucker hostage.
Yeah. And we always knew the song was special, and we were just kind of like waiting for the right, you know, are they going to do this or not? And I don't remember if they were like kind of like were letting it go or didn't really care or whatever. But at some point, my old manager, Rohan, who now works at Warner, he, you know, I've been friends with Dan forever, and Rose worked with Dan forever and all that. So Dan was going to the studio and they had an open slot for another song to cut. And Ro sent a handful, and How Not To was one of them. Dan's like, I really like this. And they cut it in the last slot. And then he afterwards, I guess, kind of found out that I had written it, which is cool because we're friends.
Oh, he didn't know then.
I don't think he knew, which is a cool little layer to it that he wasn't just like, oh, my buddy Paul cut his song. It was kind of a natural thing. And they cut it. And then like as time went on, everyone's like, hey, people are really digging this. It might be a single. And that's usually the death wish where it's never going to be a single. But lo and behold, it got singled, and that was my first one. Did a lot for me.
Death Wish, that one, and when they name a tour after a song, you're like, oh,
is that the Death Wish too?
Yeah,
I never paid too much attention to that.
Yeah, if they come out and they're like, this is the We're Butt Boys tour, you're like, well, We're Butt Boys never gonna be a single because they named that.
Now yeah. It's never gonna be a single.
Now it's probably never even gonna be a song, and I've been sitting on it's on hold. Rascal Flatts have it on hold. They've had the song on hold for
been
a year.
Sitting on it.
Yeah, I'm hoping in their last tour here they finally release something. What's the paycheck like? What's the difference in writing a number one song as a songwriter and a producer?
different.
Is one significantly more than the other?
Yeah, I mean, production, like I said, like I like doing that. It's a more constant thing for the brain, and also because like you figure out a rate in the beginning, you get paid per song, and then you get paid for playing on it and like points and all that stuff. But it's nothing like.
But the points on a number one that you produce is nothing like the songwriter. If you're one third of that, it's not the same.
No, much better to be a songwriter.
So the producer is a guaranteed check, and the songwriter is an investment.
Totally. Mm. So it's almost like a diversifying my portfolio by doing both at the same time, I guess you could say.
Are you producing anything right now?
Jordan's second record right now I'm doing, Jordan Davis.
How's that working out?
Good.
Do you have any more hits in him or no? We done?
I think we're done. It sounds like crap. It's awesome. It's going good. We're kind of just, and we've just been cutting a few every month and just, you know, it's been going awesome. He's the best. Love working with him.
What's up with you and Dan? You guys have been boys for a while. Huh? Dan Smyers of Dan and Shay.
Dan Smyers, yep.
He is a psychopath. Love him.
Love him.
He's,
yeah.
He's a
robot.
And for me, it takes one to know one. And I see just how he prepares.
Yep.
And I go, oh, I feel bad for you because I suffer from the same thing.
Yep.
Just control. And
it's a double-edged sword. He just cannot turn it off. And it's obviously working out as you saw last night on the Grammys.
And I love that it's working for him. Like, mm-hmm. I root for those guys so freaking
I'm like
hard.
Emotional when I see them go me up too. On stage because I'm just rooting for him so hard.
It's like watching a hustler get it. I mean, listen, there are a lot of talented people in this town.
Yep.
There's a lot of really talented people in this town. But that line is so thin that it's, whenever you see someone, because they were doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night shows as a country act themselves in small places. Like I was watching them hustle like that, build their fan base 5 years ago.
I have a picture from South by Southwest. Me and I think their lawyer or someone were the only two people. It was just them two, some built-in band, and two people in a completely empty place.
And it's now they're like, doing two nights in an arena.
And what's funny is that's like only the halfway point of the story because he had been doing like the whole pop rock thing. Like we'd crossed paths a million times way back in the day. So like we'd been on the road in like 2006, 7. He's been grinding forever. It's not like he just like wrote two songs. It's like, oh, cool. Yeah, I'll do a record deal. It's like he's been fighting.
Wouldn't that be cool if we got to do two songs and talk like that in that voice and get a record deal?
Yeah.
Be like, oh, I got a record deal. You get one?
I got one.
That would be great. I'm a star.
That's what I'm hoping for BLG again. We'll write two songs tonight. Oh. Bobby Bones show record deal.
I don't even care if the songs suck. We'll do it on the show.
Oh, they will.
We're back at it. We're back.
They will. We're washed up, man.
Yeah, big stars. TRL, performing TRL in Times Square. That was always a big deal.
You're dating me now.
I know. I'm dating me, though, too.
Okay.
Because that was a big deal to me to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
To watch TRL in Times Square. That was when I was in high school and college. That was like the mecca of what you could do.
Yeah.
That's probably a pretty big deal for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
I
that, was, that was the craziest. I used to run home from school at 3 p.m. or 2 or whatever it was and watch that every day.
Carson Daly was the guy on that TRL. Was he, when you played there?
When
was
we
the
did it, it was it Damien? Was that his name? Mm-hmm. That the guy? Okay. It was him.
Damien Fahey.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know.
Blondish brown. I was a big fan.
Tall guy.
Good looking guy.
Darkish hair. Good looking guy. Yeah. But yes, that was the coolest thing. We did it like four times too, I think. We had videos retired on TRL.
Meaning like they'd been on so long that they had to go.
We got to pull the plug on this one.
We got to pull it out.
And I think back to like Korn, like remember that Korn video with the bullet going, like stuff
freak,
like that.
Freak on a Leash?
Yeah, there we go. Like I go back to those and I'm thinking like we're in the same spot those were when I was like 13 or whatever.
You grew up in Boston. Are you a big Pats fan?
I am.
Did you get a Pats tattoo recently?
I didn't.
You did? What kind of tattoo did you get? What's your new tattoo?
Oh, my new one is this one.
What is that, an eagle?
It is.
What is that for?
I like it, and
that's good. You did it.
Yeah.
What's the?
It's got initials for this book called "The Obstacle Is the Way."
Oh, I've read it.
Oh, I love
it. It's one of my favorite books.
I love it, and I love the concept, and I love the whole stoic mentality, and that it's just like I will never get sick of that. And every time I look at it, I just think of like. I don't know. Just keep moving forward. The thing you're trying to get around is the thing you need to just power through.
One of my favorite five books of the past 10 years.
Love it.
And the great thing about that book, too, it's not intimidating because it's thin.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot of stories, too. And the whole premise is the thing that's driving you the craziest is what's making you successful. Like the ability to figure out how to get around what's in your way is that ends up making you what you are. So you should be grateful for your struggle.
Right.
Because that struggle is what makes you successful.
Right, exactly.
I love that.
And a lot of it was like, everyone's always like, all right, once I get through these next 3 months and this is in place and I have this much in the bank, I'm going to do what I really, it's like, no, this is your life right now. You're actually living your life. So if you keep deferring it, you're never going to be living your life. I just love stuff. I'm not like a crazy, like public speaker person, like motivational speaker thing, but I just like certain, but I'll always read one of those at a time and they just like fire me up.
Have you read, I'll ask you, what's your favorite book? Because it's hard. Books are like Netflix shows, as you think about this, is that there's so many great ones and that it's hard to get on the same page with all the shows now. And it's like, have you read this? No. What about this? No. Have you watched this show? No. Like Cheer. You haven't watched Cheer and it's the greatest show of my lifetime. So here we are. Do you have a favorite book?
Probably the book of Cheer before that they made the show out of.
Yeah, I like that.
The novel
too.
Was incredible.
It was great, yeah. the graphic novel, of course. Yeah.
Probably, honestly, The Hobbit was the first book I read as like a novel that like changed my life, like just like a fictional thing that I was like, wow, this is like art. This is incredible.
Interesting. Stay on fiction for a second.
Cool.
Let's go down the lanes.
Yes.
I like somebody that reads books, like talking about books. I'm a nerd.
Yes, love it.
Okay. Continue talking about The Hobbit, but don't go to nonfiction yet.
Cool.
So you love The Hobbit because why?
Hobbit. That was just the first thing I read that like, you know, there's always a point and some people never get out of it where you have to read books in school. And some people are just like, I'll never read a book the rest of my life. And then there's always that turning point where you're like, wow, this thing is what this is all about. Books are cool or they can be cool. And that was the first one where I was like, there's more to it than just like trying to please my teacher. And like, I want to just watch TV instead of this kind of thing.
Good for you.
And that was the one. And I was probably, I don't even know, probably like 13 or 14 or something. I just ripped through it. Loved it.
It's fun. I don't read a lot of fiction, but when I find something that is fiction and is good, it's like the greatest dessert.
Yep.
And so, because I am a big reader and I've written a couple books, I love books so much that I like to read about people because I like to read people's mistakes and go, oh, I relate, or okay, that's, I can learn about that.
Yep.
I think I learn a lot through my mistakes. Most of what I learn is through my mistakes and through others too. And I don't look at others' mistakes to go, oh, look at those idiots. I go, oh, I probably would have done that too. What can I learn from their experience?
Totally, yeah.
But on the fiction side of it, because it took me a while to not take myself so seriously to read fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But once I read the freaking Hunger Games, you read the Hunger Games books?
I didn't, no. I watched them.
Don't. Blasphemy to only watch them and not read them.
Did you watch them?
Yeah.
They're good.
They were good, yes. But
the books are better.
They always are.
They always
because
are.
You invest weeks into a book, right? And you get 2.5 hours with Jennifer Lawrence. And although that's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah. The movies were good. But
they were good.
I remember reading the books. Maybe that or what was the book? Tom Hanks ended up doing the movie of the Mona Lisa.
Da Vinci Code.
Before the Da Vinci Code blew up.
Mm-hmm. Book was everywhere.
It was so great.
I should probably read that.
But you've seen the movie, so you know how it ends.
I have not seen the movie.
Oh, great. You'll love it. And it's cliche now to say the Da Vinci Code. When I read it, and it had just been, Dan Brown had just written it. I believe you wrote it, right? Dan Brown wrote it?
Yeah, I believe so.
I was like, this is the great, because here's what I liked about it, is it was a fictional story, but they had so much reality in it, and you're learning about art.
Oh, okay,
and
that's
places,
cool. Yeah.
And all of that, all the settings were real, but there's also a story weaved in. And I was like, it's great. Two cliche books you could say.
But it doesn't matter.
Agree.
It does not matter what it seems like. I read fiction a lot because I read a nonfiction book. You know Tim Ferriss?
I know who he is.
I read a book of his and he was talking about how fiction before bed is like the best thing to just like meditatively disconnect you from the world and help you fall asleep. So it's like I used to be reading these like life self-helpy kind of books, like morning, night, and like before I bed, my gears are still turning. And once you said that, I read like 5 pages of a book before bed at night and I just pass out. It's awesome.
That works for you, huh?
I mean, I'm a good, so I can fall asleep and I could fall asleep on this table if I wanted
to.
I'm
the opposite. I have four things and I can never fall asleep. Yeah, it's the two things.
I'm like very fortunate because I know a lot of people like that. I'm very fortunate. Anytime after like 8 p.m., if I lay down, it's all over.
Nonfiction? Favorite book?
Probably Obstacles Away, I have to say, because I did get the tattoo.
That's true. You have it marked on your body.
Forever.
So I
got to hope that author doesn't do any, like, go off the rails and do anything stupid.
But it is on a banner. You could always...
I could change what that means.
Over. Oh, yeah, it could be
It could be like the ostrich is the...
Weasel. And then never say what it means. I don't talk
then
about
I'll write that
anymore.
Book. Yeah. I just read this book called The Indifferent Stars Above, which the title got me on its own, but it's about the Donner Party. If you're familiar with the, like that party that moved from the Midwest, hoping to go to California in the 1850s or whatever. And they left too late and they got caught in a snowstorm up in these mountains, and basically months went by and they were living off of like, they ate all their like oxes or whatever was pulling the horses and all that stuff. And they ended up like taking their skin and boiling them in water and eating that broth. Like they were all just starving to death, and they ended up resorting to cannibalism. And it's very well documented. And they talk about it in The Shining a little bit. So that, I love The Shining. I love the movie, the book. And that kind of got me like interested. So I bought the book thinking, okay, this is cool. This is going to be like gruesome and crazy. But the actual story of it and the facts, and it tells it in a way that you can like relate to these people as if they're people in your life. It's unbelievable. So that's just really, like, I just finished that. It was one of the best books I've ever read.
Right now I'm reading the second Mark Manson, All Hope is Effed. Because I read the first one.
Oh, The Subtle Art?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which is great.
Great.
I'm reading the second one now. Pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Capitalizing on the first one a little bit?
A little bit. Okay. It just running with it a little more.
Yep.
I do like it. I also do this thing where I read multiple books at once and all day.
I'm reading 50.
Me too. And I'm also reading Hillbilly Elegy, which Adam Hamburg gave me, which I never read.
Adam just was talking about that the other day.
He was like, you got to read it. We went to watch Arkansas games. So he gave it to me. I'm reading that. I'm reading the Ben Folds biography.
That's cool.
Because I love Ben Folds. And then my favorite book, and it was written in the late 1800s, but have you read How to Win Friends and Influence Others?
I'm very familiar, but I have not actually sat down with it. Great?
It's great in the way that most of it still holds up today, and it was written 100 years ago.
Is it, what is it, like a little bit of the style of it is like?
Well, a lot of the current, references.
The references, right, are like not like,
he's like
kosher today.
He's like, yesterday, Churchill said, and you're like, wait, that wasn't yesterday.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So there's some of that.
I got to read that
but
one too.
I read that once a year. So there are two books I read every year. That, How to Win Friends and Influence Others. I'm messing up the title. And then every year I read The Four Agreements. You ever read that?
No, I don't.
Oh, it's so short. It'll change you. For like a week, it'll change you.
So that's why you read it every year?
It's great.
Okay.
It's like, well, the thing that I take from it is don't sell
it real quick to me.
Well, first of all, it's real short. Okay. So even if you invest in if it's bad, it's over. And you're like, well, yep. Bobby's an idiot. You can get into it the same reason I got into Cheer. Like, I'm going to show him how much it sucks.
I'll read this piece of crap.
Yeah, oh, yeah, look at that. Oh, yeah. Never take anything personal. In business, ever. And there's a whole thing about that. And because we work and we're alongside people, we're running parallel, we're crossing, and we're taking a lot of things personal. Mm-hmm. But we don't know where people are coming from. We don't know why they're doing it. We don't know their scenario. We're just seeing everything from ours. And so that is something that is just, you read it and it really does adjust it, for a while, how you handle all of your relationships. But it's short. If you do read it, let me know. You can read it in 2 days.
Cool.
It's like that kind of book. I read The Notebook in 1 day. That's fiction I read and loved.
Okay.
Except it's not fiction in my heart.
I didn't read it.
Did you watch the movie?
I've watched it, yeah. Did you not know in the beginning?
The Notebook?
That it was them in the end, in the beginning?
I read it when I was like 19.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. I'm an idiot. One of my friends brought it. And what I read in 1 day. I didn't put it down.
I'm not a big... Are you a big guesser? When you start something, do you guess what's going to happen later? Do you try to?
Yes.
Because I don't.
I spend too much time doing that. And then I've got two stories going. I'm chasing two different stories.
Yours and the real one?
And I'm like, which one am I on? It's like reading two
books. Which one ends up being better usually, though?
The one they wrote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mine usually has an alien or a talking dog. Or
that can explain a lot, though. Yeah, an alien is like, that'll fix that problem, that plot hole. So those books, I feel like some of them make me feel better only when I'm reading them. And some of them I actually take things from. And that's the big difference for me with like those, like I keep saying self-help, that's such like a dated term for them. But like, I don't know, enhanced life productivity books, whatever you want to call them.
I wrote one of those, right? And it did well. But I call mine a motivational book.
That's a really good way.
I don't even know if that's a term.
That makes more sense.
But I would say my second one is called Fail Until You Don't, is a motivational book.
Yes.
But I don't take offense. I don't think, self-help,
Not even offense. I just feel like the connotation with self-help is kind of like, hey, you have something wrong with you.
But whereas we do.
Well, I mean.
Except we don't, because if everybody has something wrong with them, nobody has anything wrong with
them. There you go. That's
it. If everyone is broken, no one is broken.
Right.
Because there's no such thing as broken. If universally we're all the same and broken, that's not broken.
So no matter what, motivate. You can motivate. You're motivational. The book's motivational. There we go.
Me?
the book. Instead of saying it's help for being broken, it's you're motivating whether you're broken or not. Boom.
Yes. But I don't think we're broken.
No, we're not.
Except we all are, which makes none of us.
Yeah. We're not, but we totally
are. My therapist hates me sometimes because I'll go in and be like, but here's the thing. She's like, what? Who are you philosophizing to right now? You're paying me $125 an hour to be a philosopher?
Would you like to switch seats with me? Yeah.
But you are a Pats fan?
I am, like, big.
So I'm going to predict what's happening with Tom Brady. And this is going to live forever. So you're on the record here. Right now, the date is January 27th. We're recording this. We don't know where Tom Brady is going to go. But being a Pats fan, where does he spend his final year or two?
I spend maybe an hour every day thinking up this through, and I come to a definitive conclusion of what's going to happen. And then a little tidbit pops up on my phone, and I question everything. I don't know if I can guess. Okay. Do you want me to just do it for sport?
You don't have to. I'll guess, and you can tell me if you agree or not.
Great.
I don't think there's any way he leaves New England this year. I think they put some weapons around him. I think he stays because I don't think he goes to San Diego. They can't win. I don't think he goes to Oakland. He's not going to Indianapolis. I think you just start peeling away his options. He's not going to Dallas. And so...
So do you think he's doing all this talk just to play mind games and hope he gets what he wants in New England? That's what I hope.
He was probably open if teams... Today, again, this could really bite me in the butt because we're just talking about this live. Like the Chargers said today, we're not going back to Phil Rivers.
Right.
And so...
He already moved. Rivers already moved to Florida, I heard, right?
And today, officially, they're like... But to be fair, Brady packed his crap up and moved out of his house too.
But I heard conflicting stories on that. If you really
and his trainer moved too.
I know. There's a lot. It's dark.
And I like the Patriots a lot. I didn't grow up in Boston like you did, but I like teams that win and continue winning. And teams sometimes I don't like them for a couple of years. There's like a threshold where I'm like, okay, we get it. You're good. Two or three years. But after you get like 4 or 5 years, I'm like, oh, just respect now. Like I respect the fact that you can continue winning.
Sure. Yeah.
I think he stays, and I think that Robert Kraft probably goes, we don't want him to retire anywhere else. He's seriously looking. He probably is really looking. But I think they put a couple. You can't just throw to one Edelman.
But he wants more money. And we're already paying like our defense a ton, I think. And we have like a bunch of other, like Antonio Brown still needs to get paid. And there's all these weird things. And then I'm
in jail.
And then I'm afraid of like this. Remember this filming thing? Them getting caught.
Yeah, and recently, again,
like if he leaves, let's put it this way: if Brady leaves, and the filming thing comes down, and we lose like a first round pick, or I'm gonna just stop watching football. That's where I'm at.
Both hit you in the balls at the same time. Brady leaves.
I'm so afraid it's all gonna hit one weekend, and I'm just gonna be like, I just am gonna start watching rugby.
But the Bengals, they were filming in Cincinnati, if I'm going from memory, right?
Yes, which makes even less sense. But keep going.
Right, and I believe the Bengals organization. And it all came out that they weren't really filming.
Did you see the video that got leaked of it, though?
Well, did it look like they were filming?
It didn't look good.
Yeah. At least they're not the Astros. You could be an Astros fan.
That's worse. I'm glad that's taking the heat of all of it right now.
Oof, that's a bad
that's
situation.
That's really bad. The mic, the earpiece and the thing.
The buzzer, the whole thing.
I remember when, what's that, the short dude?
Altuve.
When he hit the home run, he was holding this thing.
Don't rip on my jersey.
That is incriminating.
He's running.
That's a Netflix documentary.
You know them already on that. He's like, don't tear off my jersey. Don't tear off, because he's wearing a, he's allegedly.
That when he did that, I was like, that's weird. Is he just superstitious or?
Well, what he said was he's very modest.
I know what he said. I'm not buying any of that.
Did you write today?
I wrote today.
Anything good?
Yeah, it's cool. We haven't finished it yet. I like taking my time. This year is my don't just rush to get a song done year. Not that I do that normally, but we're gonna finish it another day and make it the best that it can be.
What's 2020, right? What's it to you? Like, what's the goal?
Just keep rolling and use the good energy. And like another thing from a book, that the 80-20 rule, are you familiar with that? Like, you get 80% of your benefits basically from 20% of your whatever you do, kind of thing. So I'm just trying to find what that 20% of my life is that's the most productive and just focus on that. I kind of can sometimes get lost and like his song might not be that great, but I'm really determined to make the demos sound better. So the song, it's just like I got to cut ties with things that aren't perfect and just work on what is the best. Focus, maybe. That's the word.
Any goal, like specific goal you'd like to hit this year? You're trying for that triple crown. You get the old three number one.
I would. I don't really look at things in terms of that. I've never been a big like planner of like my 1 year plan, my 5 year plan, 10 year. I've never been that kind of guy. I've always just on a feeling like I joined the band on a whim. I left high school early. I joined it. That worked out for me. I felt the need to move to LA. I felt the need to move to Nashville. Just always have done the thing and followed kind of my passion and found what I need. So not any big like, I mean, I could say I want like 10 number ones this year. That's a cool goal. But like, I don't really look at it in terms of that.
All right. Let's recap what we've learned. We've done a lot.
Yes.
We've talked books.
Books.
And you have a tattoo of a book. I think that is about as cool.
And
as
a tattoo of someone reading a book.
Where? Oh, she is reading a book.
I just remembered that.
What book is she reading?
I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So we talk books. We talk Patriots. If Brady leaves and you lose a first rounder or are fined a bunch of money.
That's just my depressed mind. You're going to leave. I know we're good. I love Brady. I love the Pats. They owe me nothing. They've done everything for me. I had the best childhood growing up watching that. I'm good. Love them.
Would you rather the Pats win a Super Bowl and have to vacate it or not win one at all?
Win it and have to give it back?
Yeah.
Not that. Not win at all. We're good. We're good. Clean slate. If all we get is this and we have a little dark period for a while, I'm fine with that.
Famous last words until you're deep in the dark period.
I know.
Then it sucks. I've lived a dark period. I'm an Arkansas Razorback football fan. Die hard. I've lived in a dark period.
I vicariously live through that because I think about Adam every time it's on and Justin Moore.
Yeah, so. All of us are big.
I can't feel for you, but I can understand a little bit. So I'm sorry.
We all go to games together. Like, that's a tight-knit group of...
Were they good? I'm not a big college person. They were good, like, what, years ago, right?
Well...
Were they ever, like, dominant?
In the 60s. We won a national championship in the 60s. And then we did pretty well in the Southwest Conference back when we were toddlers. We were very close with Bobby Petrino. We were one game away from the national championship.
Okay.
And then he got in trouble for hooking up with the girl that worked with him. Dude beat him up that worked in the administration because that was his fiance. It's a whole thing. He got run out. Program started over. We haven't been successful.
Is that worse or is cheating in the game worse?
I believe there's cheating in the game at all points, right, all the time.
So when it comes out, it's just everyone was doing it kind of thing. We got caught.
We did. I wish we would cheat more. I'm going to be honest with you because we suck.
Okay.
I'd like a little cheating. If it leads to a little victory, I'll take it.
It works.
Yeah. I see.
You win.
I see that. Cheat. I know. And then let the haters hate. Right. I have no winning. We're the greatest sports. And that sucks. I don't like being a good sport. I like winning sometimes.
No, that's true.
And we're going to get Boys Like Girls back together. And you're going to play on the morning show.
We are.
Love that. I'm going to take take 2% though.
That's probably really going to happen. Yeah.
You think me taking 2% or are you guys getting back together?
The first one.
Oh, me taking 2%.
No. The original first one.
Okay. love that. And Mike, anything else that we learned here today? I feel like we've had a good one.
Yeah, it's good.
Anything else? You don't make as much money producing as writing a hit song, but you do make more money producing than writing a song. Because most songs you write, you don't get any money for.
Yeah, it's all a numbers game. But this job, you got to do it for the passion. You got to do it for the love. If I was only cared about money, I would have done something else. I truly, it sounds cheesy, but I really love waking up and just seeing what happens every day. I really do love it.
Look, you sound like Russell Dickerson. That guy wakes up and is like, the world is great.
No, I don't mean in life in general. I mean like writing in the writing room. All right. Usually wake up and I'm like, oh, I have to do this all over again.
Oh, yeah. Russell's the opposite. I love that guy. He wakes up and is like, whoa,
he's got energy.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I also, Mike just sent me this note too. The Bold Type has a 98% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Dude, crazy, right?
Yeah.
That's high.
That's extremely high. And tell Katie I said hello.
I will.
All right, there we go. This has been a good one. Episode 225. And follow Paul BLG on Instagram and Twitter. Paul BLG on Instagram and Twitter. And as long as you're BLG, it's always alive.
It's alive.
It's always alive.
Breathing.
Because Boys Like Girls is always right there. Right at my fingertips. Anytime I want. Hey, Mike, would you give me a little more of The Great Escape? Want to hear it back to my ears?
Yeah, that's important.
Play us out here.
Oh, no, my board's dead.
Oh, no. Well, I will sing it then.
There we go.
Throw it away! Forget yesterday!
A little higher.
I'm going to blow it. I'm going to have to go on the air tomorrow with a blown voice. All right. Episode 225. Thank you very much. We'll see you guys next time.